Next item on the agenda is item number 10, presentation by the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, Dr. Bob Orth, annual review of status of submerged aquatic vegetation.
Well, good afternoon again.
Good afternoon, sir.
Certainly with the recognition that there are a large number of public hearings following me and the fact that a lot of background material was covered this morning, I'm going to stick with just the basic information from each of these particular projects, that is, the data. So we'll start pretty quickly. So this is kind of the normal presentation that I've been making and covering YSAV, which I'm not because that was covered this morning, some bay-wide status and trends, the Chincoteague Bay SAV Sanctuary. We had no imagery for the previous year, but I will say that for 2017, we've seen it. There are no additional scars, so I'm not going to bring that issue up. We're going to do the propeller scarring update because that is being funded by you all, and I have always said that in lieu of the report, I'm going to give you the presentation that will make it a lot easier than having to read a long document. And I always like to bring up how we're doing with this restoration effort in the seaside bays, because this is a project that's of significance, you know, not just to us, but to a lot of other people, and then actions needed. So, with that, bay-wide status and trends. Here are the data for 2016, and I highlight the 2016 bay-wide data. We are did pretty well, and we're close to 100,000 acres, and I'm not going to cover any of the bay-wide segments or whatever. I just want to give you the total number that SAV is increasing in the Bay. The 2016 number was the highest we had seen in all previous years. I will say this, the 2017 numbers are about ready to be released in mid-April, and we are gonna break the 100,000 acres, not a lot. So things are doing really well Bay-wide. in terms of trends, this came out in a paper that was highlighted in the newspaper this morning, the Daily Press, in terms of what we're seeing and why. We spent a year and a half with 14 people looking at all the data. And that paper, which, like I said, came out a month ago and highlighted in the Daily Press, we've seen a reduction in nutrients of about 24%, and over that time period from 1984, a 245% increase in SAV. So the bottom line of this entire paper, with a lot of people working, is that nutrient reductions have definitely led to SAV recovery since time, and nutrient pollution is going to reduces new SAV. The important thing is that these TMDLs and all the nutrient efforts being conducted by all the states is working, and the evidence in this resource is showing up really well. Now, that's great news, but it's complicated because it does create issues that we're going to see in the future with a lot of aquaculture interactions. But as we've seen with the aquaculture industry, we try to work with them, work with VMRC to deal with compromises. But as I said, good news, but we'll have some additional issues that will be forthcoming. And I like to think that the resolutions will be equally, you know, compromised for both. now, I do want to mention one thing. We are trying to create fact sheets for each of these segments. So this is something that we're doing right now. It's a two-page fact sheet. I mentioned about segments. For every single segment in the Chesapeake Bay, we're creating this particular fact sheet. And that basically is going to be, for example, right here, the mouth of the James River. What's happening with SAV at the mouth of the James River from 1984 through the present? And this is the data. These are the data that come from our aerial survey, and the dark green and light green and lighter colors represent the density coverage, as Mr. Ballard has asked us about. The important thing is that in 1994 we had almost no SAV, or 1884 had very little SAV this part of the James. Now we have, and have reached the goal several times over the last few years. Believe it or not, this was triggered by some restoration work we did that was funded by the Recreational Fishing License Board, and that effort in and of itself triggered the increase in SAV in part of the James River. We do highlight via some icons down here what's happening over time in terms of transplanting, some good water quality, poor water quality, and then some heat events, and then we have some take-home points. So I just want to give that to you because in the next few months, we're going to be finalizing this, and this will be made to all the managers in as fact sheets for people who want it. And we're doing, obviously, one for the Eastern Shore, which that segment's going to include the information that we are embedding aquaculture as one of those activities that takes place in each of these segments. And it's a recognition that, you know, aquaculture is a very important part of this component of SAV. So Again, that's something that we're doing. And again, you'll see some colored dots down here, and you see a big colored dot. That colored dot represents the fact that we have met the target for that particular river. And then across the scale, if it doesn't meet it, we get either a yellow, an orange, or a red. And with those, we also give recommendations as to what we can do to improve or reach that restoration target. So that's kind of new. That's stuff we're working on right now, and we should be finished in the next few months. Propeller scarring update. You know where we're going.
Mr. Yeah. Mullen?
These are
question. Oh. I'm sorry.
A point of clarification. You said a moment ago aquaculture is an important part of SAV.
In terms of
bringing it back?
Well, it's an important part of the SAV aerial coverage because it occurs within SAV, and it's also an issue that we've been working on with the aquaculture industry for the last couple of years of figuring out how we can work out in areas that have, let's say, patchy SAV. So that's why I'm bringing it in, because we recognize as scientists that it's here and it's a very productive fishery, and we have to include it as part of our analysis of what's happening with SAV in these particular segments.
Okay.
That's why we highlight it here. It's not here, but in the segments for the Eastern Shore where a lot of the operations for either clam aquaculture or in the case of the Western Shore where there's a lot of oyster aquaculture, we embed that as part of this, not the analysis, but tell the manager that this is something that is ongoing, part of the interactions that we have to consider in SAV recovery.
But answer your question or get, okay, great.
Color scarring update. Again, what we've shown you over the time frame is over years, when we started this through 2017, the number of linear feet of scarring from propeller scars from the hall seiners, and what we found, of course, early on was there was a lot of scarring in the early years, and then it recovers pretty quickly. So this is followed by that year in which the recovery is pretty quick. And the idea is that we want to follow it, because in case that part happens again, we can, you know, at least alert you and the resource officers who are out there that this issue is gaining attention again. And so for Pocosin, here is this number of scars for in 2017 that occurred in 2016. There were a few more scars here, and again, we want to see what happens in 2018 imagery, but I think it's something that perhaps the resource officers need to know, or maybe remind hall seiners of the challenges that they have, and also the regulations that were approved by the board in terms of the timing of the hauling.
Oh, I guess my question for you, as former chief of law enforcement, do you notify Colonel Alderman or whatever when you see these trends?
This is why we present this early on.
Okay.
It's well before the Holstein fishery. I mean, they've been very cooperative, both the fishery
right.
and the officers. But again, the fact that we saw more last year, it's in recognition that perhaps a little reminder to the Holsteiners to be very careful. And again, right. as we said, most of the regulations are not to say no, but to more say, let's be careful about the resource.
Understood. Thank you.
Coastal flats, and then we saw the same thing in Browns Bay, the beginning marsh area. Not a lot over the time period, but last year, again, there seemed to be an increased number of scars. So, again, just to recognize that this is happening, we've said, well, you have said no, but the officers may want to recognize when they're out there, so be careful that this is happening. So
I'm just looking at the one blip, and I'm by no means a...
Well, okay, so what this is... The number of linear feet that occurred that we mapped from the 2017 injury, those are the scars that occurred in 2016 because we don't see them until the 2017 imagery. If they occur in 2016 sometime in that sometime period between, like May, June, and our imagery is taken always around the June time period, and that's why we don't see the scar until the next year. So this is that level of scarring was somewhere around 10,000 linear feet. Prior to that, there was almost no, well, not prior, but during these years, up until, 1999, there was the number of scarring was much less.
Well, if I were to look at that from a crime analysis perspective, I would say there's one bad actor out there, or somebody that's all of a sudden decided to cause a problem because...
We bring you the data. It's something that you draw attention to. It's part of the project that we have, and why we present this information to you, before the Holstein fishery occurs.
Thank you.
That's basically it. Okay, moving very quickly into the seaside restoration effort. This is what we're seeing in terms of the number of acres of seagrass that occur in the seaside coastal bays. These are the main bays behind the islands. So the number of acres over time, this is what we're seeing through 2017 is a little over, almost 7,000 acres of seagrass that are currently present in the seaside bays. And this blue line represents the number of acres that we've seeded. So the difference is what nature is doing naturally. So it continues to spread because there's a lot of available habitat. And while we focus our restoration efforts in small areas, nature does the rest. And you know, that got into some of the questions that we had this morning about, okay, if an area is disturbed, how quickly does SAD come back? It's because they produce seeds or roots and rhizomes that sometimes get uprooted. So you know, it's good news for the seaside coastal bays. One issue that we've seen, and we brought this up last year, these are the circular scars that we first noticed in Chincoteague Bay. We now have seen them in the coastal bays. And this is primarily in South Bay down here. So these are the circular scars that are created by people who come in with a dredge and excavate the area for clams. And these are pretty shallow water areas. So this is 2015, 2017. So you can see the scar is this scar. A lot of scars that were intense here are here. Some recolonization occurring, but you can see that in this case, these scars don't recover at least in the 2 years that are here. So these scars are, there's a lot of damage that occurs. So the recovery rate's probably gonna take, you know, a few more years, but they are occurring in something that concerns us in the recovery. Now, I do wanna highlight, this is kind of an interesting case because this is, again, this is 15 and this is 17, you know, lots of scars here, but here's the case that concerns us. Here are the bailer grounds, and here's the private lease. All this is occurring in public grounds.
And where is this located?
This is down here in South Bay, right over this location here. So again, something that concerns us because these are public grounds and that should not be happening. And so for the officers that are working this area, it is perhaps something that they should recognize. It's
you going to leave us a copy of this PowerPoint?
Yes, sir.
We got it this for us? Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's kind of where we are now. Very quickly, where we are with the bay scale update. Again, you know, as we noted that historically there was a significant bay scallop fishery prior to 1932 because there was a lot of eelgrass. Eelgrass is important for the bay scallops. And so when the eelgrass started recovering, we said, okay, let's see if we can get the bay scallop fishery to recover. And also noting that, you know, we're linking this to the aquaculture fishery because more than likely, if anything happens, well, we might have a sustainable fishery. From what I understand, the aquaculture industry is following this very close. The possibility of having a third species that they, you know, may be able to offer to the public in terms of sales. Very simply, every year we assess what the bay scallops are because VIM's Eastern Shore Lab is raising bay scallops and puts them out in cages so they can spawn naturally. We are trying to work for very closely with one of the hatcheries to help us assist by producing more bay scallops. We got some extra funding from a GoFund program, and we're hoping to get some additional scallops that we can put out because basically, bottom line is, the more scallops that are out there, the more likely we're going to have more scallops in the future. So every year, by sometime in July, every one of those red dots is a place where a boat goes with a bunch of divers, and we hand-check every one of these areas. So over the course of a single summer, we go to all these different red dots. There are basically 16,000 square meters of bottom that we hand check. Because again, a lot of effort, we want to know, is the work that we're doing to restore bay scallops really making a difference in the natural fishery? These are the data from those 5 years of 2012 through 2017. We started in South Bay, which is the dark green, and then we moved our sampling effort to two other bays that are now heavily covered with seagrass. We call Cobb Bay and Southern South Bay. And you can see the abundance has changed over time, which is very natural for that population. In 2017, there was quite an increase from 2016. We feel we've shown or demonstrated that the effort that we are putting into getting the bay scallops is happening, but the numbers are very low. And we think that, again, the sustainable population that we would like to get may be years down the road, as long as we can keep the effort up of putting more babies out that or more adults that will spawn. And that basically is it. I tried to keep this to the basics of what we're doing. And so some of the actions we need from you is because of the propeller scarring update requires us to get support from the commission. We come to you each year with this information, but also requiring, you know, approval for additional funding for the next year to follow this effort. And then just to let you know that, again, The annual monitoring is an emerging issue because of funding issues, but we're lucky so far we've been able to keep that funding going. And the eelgrass bay scout work, you know, we're funded by VMRC's recreational fishing license. The coastal program is ending, so we are going to go in with a proposal this year to continue that work to support that seaside effort.
Yeah.
So I think, Rob, you need to do your little...
Is this when you ask for money, like right at the same? Believe it or not, after 6 years, I still remember, and here comes the hook.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I want to say that I recognize the sage advice of Dr. Luca back, who encouraged me to keep this right to the point data.
Yeah.
So we have funded in the amount of $22,000, and that is split between the Commercial Fishing Advisory Board and the Recreational Fishing Advisory Board. It will need the commission's approval.
So before that, any questions?
I have a few questions, but not really related to the action items. Do you want to do the action first, or?
Well, you can ask now because we may change our mind. You can't ever tell.
I'll just throw you four, and you can answer them all together.
Sure.
Who funds the aerial survey? When you mentioned we're at 100,000 acres. Baywide, how are those numbers looking in Virginia? If you can address that question. The fact sheets you mentioned, where would we find those? And then what you're seeing in terms of warming temperatures and eelgrass.
First, who funds us? As a partnership, we get a significant amount of funding from EPA. We also receive funds from the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality, NOAA for our coastal program, and Maryland DNR and Maryland Department of Environment. We have five funders that participate in this particular project. So let's see, that was the first question. The second question was the acres of SAV, baywide, and how we're doing in Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting question because it ties to the fourth question you had about eelgrass. Eelgrass is an issue because of the fact that it's very sensitive to warm temperatures. If we go back to this particular figure. I had a figure here that showed what's happening in different segments. I pulled that out only because of recognition of the time effort, but in 2005 and 2010, we had significantly hot summers that influenced the distribution of SAV in the lower bay where eelgrass is sensitive. So the warming bay temperatures appear to be having an influence on eelgrass covers, so that is a concern for us. We've been following that very closely. Some of the areas that were dominated by eelgrass are now recovering primarily with widgeon grass, and whether we see some recovery of eelgrass in these areas, we don't know. But again, that's why this needs to be annually surveyed. So I think that was the three of your four.
Yeah, where to find the fact sheet.
Oh, the fact sheet. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're doing those right now, and I wanted to show you the James River just because that's one that's close to heart here, and they'll be available both on a website and as a book that we'll put out. They're primarily for resource managers because they're the ones that have to deal with, you know, the restoration targets and all the other things that go on in each of these segments. So I'd say by late spring, we should be finished. We actually, rather at 92, we have combined some segments, so we have about 57 of these fact sheets. So we've got a few... there's the Potomac River. There's the part that we were discussing. I didn't want to bring it up, but the fact that this is one that we finished for the tidal freshwater areas for Virginia and what's been happening with SAV over time, and what was not mentioned is the influence that improving stingray treatment plants in the Washington, D.C. area has made a huge influence on how the SAV is doing. Notwithstanding what hydrilla has done, the fact is that the removal of nitrogen via nitrification and then subsequent denitrification has had a huge influence on the amount of nutrients coming out of that area. So that's been coupled actually at the same time as the increasing SAV that we see in that part of the Potomac. So this is, again, you can see this is green because we met the target one or several years. And these little icons are down here, you know, transplanting the sewage treatment plants, light, and then all these little icons about the different species. And again, we highlight that because there are many species that we now find in these beds that sometimes people think are just hydrilla. They aren't. They're mixed beds of 5, 6, 7 species of SAD.
Okay.
So we are making headway, and hopefully by the time I come here next year, they're all done.
Mr. Ballard.
Do you have a sense, as we hear conflict cases between SAV habitat and other uses of that habitat, how important the SAV habitat is in the suitable areas where these conflicts are occurring versus other inputs like sewage treatment, nutrient reductions to the expansion of grass?
Definitely. That is a concern because, as you know, Delegate Hodges put together some bills that emphasize stormwater issues. And, stormwater is a big topic right now as to what happens with SAV. So, that's an issue that relates to what we're trying to do to improve SAV, or at least, the state's trying to do that. So the conflicts are sometimes related to, close proximity of SAV beds to where stormwater may be, but again, when you start looking at the big picture, like in the Rappahannock, the effort to reduce nutrients seems to be playing a big role as to the recovery of SAV. And the mention of TMDL comes up all the time. That is something that is going to be very relevant as we move down towards what they call the 2025 reassessment. So we're on target, but. We do have challenges, and I said in this newspaper article, this is a mission accomplished. We've got to maintain this effort. So I don't know if I've answered your question or not.
I think halfway, and I'll rephrase. If we had good water quality, better water clarity, how many acres in the Chesapeake Bay region would be suitable for SAV, depending on water depth and other factors?
Yep. Well, if you recall this morning when you asked a question was asked about restoration targets, the target for the entire bay is 180,000 acres. So we're going to be a little over 100,000. I mean, we are doing quite well, so we're still off target. Now, that's bay-wide. But remember, for example, like the Potomac River here, we've exceeded the restoration target. So it could be that in some segments we may have more, in some segments we may not be able to reach the restoration target. Some segments, like the Elizabeth River, doesn't even have a restoration goal because there was never any SAV. As we can tell historically, maybe when John Smith came here in 1600, there was. It balances out. Places like this have more, other places have less. But the restoration target is there, again, based on, the historic recent coverage, the single best year. So, there are going to be places like along the Eastern Shore where, Cherrystone, that big shoal area that's out there, that used to be historically vegetated, and we're not sure why it's not revegetating now. It's an enigma. Unlike, if you go up to Hunger's Creek, that big bar offshore allows the seagrass to do well. Why that's not happening down there at Cape Charles or the big bar is enigmatic to us. And that's a huge area.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Further questions? Please tell me again what we need, how much you need, and what we need to do as far as the motion is concerned.
This is $22,000 for continuation of the monitoring of the scarring, and that is split equally between the commercial and recreational advisory boards.
The matter's before the commission. Motion.
I'll move to approve the request for SAV monitoring financing.
To the tune of $22,000, not to exceed. Is it second, Mr.
Yes.
Minor? Second by Mr. Minor. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you.
You asked about density 4. See how that dark green color is in that entire Potomac? That's because it's all dense SAV up there. Whereas, if you went this James River one, just to highlight that, you can see there are some other colors in there. Those are the different density classes. So that gets to the question you had this morning about coverage.
Dr. Worth, thank you for your dedication to this. I've been hearing this for a number of years now, and honestly, nothing but the news just gets better and better. So that's always great.
And the staff, and I look forward to seeing you again in the not-too-distant future.
With even better news. Good deal. Thank you.
And this presentation is on the desktop, so you can take it off and
Yeah, I just want
if you have any questions,
I want law enforcement to see those scars, because we had those are not new problems at all. So anyway, thank you, sir.
Thank you.